embattled Congressman Matt Gaetz.
Matt Gaetz was one of the very few members in the entire Congress who bothered to stand up against permanent Washington on behalf of his constituents.
Matt Gaetz right now, he's a problem for the Democratic Party, and he can cause a lot of hiccups in passing of laws. So we're going to keep running those stories to keep hurting him.
If you stand for the flag and kneel in prayer, if you want to build America up and not burn her to the ground, then welcome, my fellow patriots. You are in the right place. This is the movement for you.
You ever watch this guy on television? It's like a machine, Matt Gaetz.
I'm a canceled man in some corners of the internet. Many days I'm a marked man in Congress, a wanted man by the deep state.
They aren't really coming for me. They're coming for you. I'm just in the way.
Welcome back to Firebrand. This is Congressman Matt Gaetz broadcasting live from room 2021 of the Rayburn House Office Building here in the Capitol Complex in Washington, D.C. I've got major updates regarding where you can get information regarding the actions that Congress is taking and reviewing to secure our elections, the investigations into places, particularly in swing states, where clean elections were not being run. Also, I'm going to have the latest tea on House leadership disputes. We've got some reporting out of the New York Times and out of Axios, but you know not to just believe the New York Times, so I will let you know about the conversations we've been having regarding upcoming discussions on the border and particularly on the budget and on the debt limit. Also, the FBI is undercover. Maybe it's your local Catholic parish. The Weaponization Subcommittee just releasing the latest information that Chairman Jim Jordan has made available regarding information we've learned regarding undercover efforts by the FBI to infiltrate the Catholics, as if Catholics are the big problem that we have as a country. Obviously, that's not the case. But we began the update today with an unequivocal statement against violence, against political violence, particularly against these senseless actions that we see over and over again in our country where loss of life is entirely preventable. And this morning, we were made aware yet again of another shooting, this time at a bank in Louisville, Kentucky. And sadly, from what we know, it looks like four people lost their lives in Kentucky and another eight were injured. The shooter is dead as well. We, of course, want to take time to mourn the loss of innocent life, but we should not wait in acting to prevent these frequent aggressive acts from happening in the future. Democrats want to blame guns, of course, but we know it's not that simple. It's misguided, even. Your grandparents used to be able to order mail-order automatic weapons, and when the Second Amendment was written, the American people, such as they were, could own cannons. No mass shootings back then. Why? Well, let's take a look at the profile of some of these most recent nut jobs who've been terrorizing us. The Louisville shooter is apparently a deranged, mentally ill leftist. Aside from using his pronouns in his bio, which are he, him, by the way, he, him likes to post memes on Reddit accusing Trump of racism and celebrating COVID lockdowns because he, him considers he himself an introvert. Not unlike the Nashville shooter, who was especially deranged and clinically insane, this shooter in Kentucky allegedly made comments to a friend about being suicidal and wanting to kill other innocents. My first question would be, are these people on SSRIs? Are they taking anti-anxiety medication or antidepressants? We are the most drugged-up generation in all of human history, and these drugs are being handed out like candy, not behind some Walmart or on some street corner, but by Big Pharma. And Big Pharma knows that there are side effects to a lot of these drugs that they push that can cause psychosis and even make feelings of suicide and violence and depression all the more acute. They have these mind-altering medications, and many mass shooters, don't know about this particular case in Kentucky, but many mass shooters have been on these drugs and have actually been on them for quite some time. It used to be the case where if you saw some second or third grader acting up, you could have some thoughtful parenting, you could have some behavior modification that wasn't necessarily so chemical in nature. And now it seems to be converting to some sort of chemical solution is what we're willing to turn to all too soon in life for young people. And it leads to this lifetime of dependence and side effects and cascading consequences, sometimes lethal. So is there a connection between some of this violence we've seen and gender dysphoria? The Nashville shooter wasn't the first gender-confused individual to go homicidal. Maybe shooting people full of hormones doesn't make them less likely to shoot us. Just what a mentally unstable person needs. Massive mood swings caused by hormone therapy. It's quite literally a recipe for mass violence, and frequently, Big Pharma has been caught pushing these antidepressants and puberty blockers and hormone shots because there's money to be made in that business. It's profitable. An actual witch couldn't cook up a more potent cocktail of mind-altering potions if she them tried. Big Pharma is out of control, and this country has a major mental health care problem. It seems the more we take drugs for our mental health care, the more mentally unhealthy we become. How about that? Maybe they have to sell the virus before they sell the antidote. Maybe the whole regime of Big Pharma is built on this fiction that they have to convince us that we are so broken and fragile and frail that we have to take these drugs forever to be functioning in society. Innocent people are forced to share a country with dangerous people. Our streets have been taken over by the criminally insane. Homeless encampments are everywhere. Blue cities are enabling them with their policies. And the Democrats are telling the trans community, one of the most, unfortunately, severely unstable groups in the world, that Republicans are coming after them and they need to defend themselves by killing people who don't agree with them. They tell people like this that the Louisville shooter, you know, they tell folks like the Louisville shooter that Republicans are evil and racist and fascist and that we must be stopped at all costs. And then they wonder why random acts of violence are coming from the political left. I recently experienced this again. Someone who was brazenly boasting about their gayness called my office threatening that if I come for the gays, he'll shoot me in the head. Listen to the voicemail here for the first time.
Hi, my name is Alan Poller, A-L-L-A-N-P-O-L-L-E-R, phone number 802-376-8931. And I just want to let you know, Representative Matt Gaetz, if you keep on coming for the gays, we're going to strike back. And I guarantee you, you do not want to fuck with us, because we will kill you if that's what it takes. I will take a bullet to your fucking head if you fuck my rights anymore. And then if you want to keep going down that path, you know who's next.
There's a lot about that call that's disturbing and bizarre and weird, and I guess I don't know at the outset what they exactly think I did to come for the gays. What was that, my effort to try to get drag queen story hours not paid for by the U.S. taxpayer on military bases? I don't really know. I think we should be friendly to all. I think we should be accommodating in our hearts, but that doesn't mean that we have to reorient the fundamentals of American life or the science of gender to be accommodating to people like that individual. And I'm grateful for the folks at the FBI field office who ensured that this individual was arrested. And since it's an ongoing legal matter, I won't have further comment other than to say I'm so grateful for the people who work in my office, and they do not deserve to be terrorized by the likes of those types of individuals. So the Democrats are purposefully riling up their nutty shock troops in hopes that they will terrorize normal Americans into submission. Rand Paul was assaulted by his riled-up neighbor. A congressional baseball practice was shot up by a riled-up Bernie bro. You just heard the voicemail left for me, and more will come. It's the Democratic Party and Big Pharma that are unleashing the crazies on you, and nobody seems to have a solution for it. So here's one. We need to reopen the asylums. There are severely mentally ill people who do not have a right to wander our streets seeking and selecting who they are going to terrorize. Whether there is criminal culpability or not, there is a permanent element of society that is dangerous. And it does not make us more just or more compassionate to have them walking amongst the rest of us. Because then you see the type of loss of life that we've seen too frequently from these acts of violence. Now, subject to due process, of course, in our Constitution, we have to put some people away. And that might not be politically correct to say, but it is the truth that we encounter, especially in a world in which we're getting so many people chemically addicted. Good people have a right to exist in the country without wondering if some crazy leftist or mentally ill individual lurking around the corner is about to post up and kill you, maybe even at your local bank, like we saw in Kentucky, quite sadly. There's other news today coming out of the weaponization subcommittee on which I serve. This afternoon, the Select Committee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government broke news that we now have proof that the FBI was utilizing at least one undercover asset, possibly more, to infiltrate local religious organizations as, quote, new avenues for tripwire and source development. Here's the tweet. Now, this letter that Chairman Jordan sent to Christopher Wray, director of the FBI, explains that we have been seeking information concerning a document produced to us by the Richmond Field Office of the FBI entitled, quote, interest of racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists in radical traditionalist Catholic ideology almost certainly presents new mitigation opportunities. So this is a memo coming out of the Richmond Field Office where an assessment is being made that there's this great threat in traditional Catholics, but don't worry, we can mitigate that threat so long as we have the FBI more involved in the Catholic Church. Now, in this document, the FBI categorized Catholic Americans based on theological distinctions and relied on, you will not believe this, the left-wing and defamatory Southern Poverty Law Center as authority to classify certain Christians as potential domestic terrorists. The FBI, relying on information from at least one undercover agent, sought to engage with mainline Catholic parishes to, quote, sensitize the congregation to warning signs of radicalization and enlist their assistance to serve as suspicious activity tripwires. Is that what you think of your fellow parishioners, your fellow churchgoers, that they're the potential tripwires that could rat you out to the FBI if they don't like your politics or your bumper sticker, how you pray, where you pray, what you pray? The FBI also expressed an interest in source development within placement and access to the parishes that they were interested in. This is completely abusive, and it is everything the Weaponization Committee has been fighting to uncover and stop. Out-of-touch, partisan bureaucrats in charge of the FBI consider everyday red-blooded American Catholics to be threats to our democracy. What, because they're pro-life? They are spying on anyone and everyone who doesn't march to the beat of the regime's drum. Don't support Drag Queen Story Hour. Don't believe that elementary schools should be discussing gender and critical race theory. Consider yourself an enemy of the state because you may be on the FBI's radar. Christian Americans are the foundation of this nation. Christian Americans built America and work every day charitably, kindly, lovingly to sustain it. Christians are essential to preserving our country and to stop the destruction of everything that makes America great. That is why Christians are so often the target. The regime wants you to fall in line and get with the program. And the intelligence bureaucracy knows this. They're desperately trying to cripple the opposition. So stay strong. Continue to speak out and stand up against any radical takeover of our country. And we will do everything we can to prevent the FBI from continuing this behavior. And trust me, there's going to be much more to come on that story. I also want to give everyone an important update regarding election integrity. The House Administration Committee here in Congress has jurisdiction over elections. And I want to encourage you to go to the House Administration Republican website or to the website of the committee's chairman, Brian Steil, S-T-E-I-L, and sign up for the Faith in Elections Project, Educate, Engage, and Reform. The top line messaging here is that for 3 years, Democrats have been working to undermine our faith in elections and really try to use the power they had in Washington to federalize elections. We believe that state-specific approaches, rather than one-size-fits-all tactics, will ensure the security and fairness of elections, specifically Florida, Louisiana, Ohio, and most recently Georgia, strengthened voter ID laws, and they can operate in some regards as a gold standard on those questions. Now, I think in Georgia, there's a lot of personnel they need to change out. But I'm also glad that the House Administration Committee is looking at some specific examples where we've fallen short of the standard that we set for the world. And I want to just bring this one to your attention. Luzerne County, Pennsylvania. So on Tuesday, March 28th, the House Administration Committee held a hearing entitled 2022 Midterms Look Back Series. And what they found during this investigation is that in Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, nearly a third of the polling locations ran out of ballots on Election Day. And in those places, many voters were denied the right to vote. And so we have to find out where this is happening, not to federalize elections, but to try to get local officials to be responsive and transparent and faithful to their job and their mission. Because if you run out of ballots on Election Day and you predominantly have voters who think a particular way choosing to vote on Election Day, then not only is that voter suppression, but it's election interference because there is a partisan outcome, an ideological outcome as a consequence. Also want to give you an update from the Ways and Means Committee. Chairman Jason Smith and Oversight Subcommittee Chairman David Schweikert put out a statement regarding the recent updates to the administration's implementation of their IRS reporting scheme. So here's what you need to know about this. Democrats lowered the threshold for reporting to a mere $600 in their so-called American Rescue Plan. Given how problematic these new requirements will be, the Biden administration has pushed back the rollout of this until next year, but that shows how foolish it was in the first place. Now, many Americans, as a result of this rescue plan, are going to need rescue because the lower reporting threshold will likely result in higher accounting charges for middle-class people just to comply with the law, just to not be audited or terrorized by the 87,000 new IRS agents. There's an important piece of legislation that I'm going to be co-sponsoring that I want you to know about it, H.R. 190, the Saving Gig Economy Taxpayers Act. This was introduced by Representative Carol Miller of West Virginia, and it would restore the higher threshold to more than 200 commercial transactions worth more than $20,000 in payments. So to not have the IRS crawling around in every $601 transaction, Representative Miller's legislation would raise that threshold to $20,000, and it would be for commercial transactions rather than other matters that ought fall below the scrutiny of the IRS without question. So that's important legislation to keep up with as well. Finally, I want to talk about the big news that a lot of Republicans in Congress are reacting to now. It broke in the New York Times. It's a piece by Jonathan Swan entitled, "Staring Down a Debt Crisis, McCarthy Toils to Navigate GOP Divisions." And in the piece, the main takeaway, McCarthy is quoted, not really quoted, on background, people told the New York Times that Speaker McCarthy had called Budget Chairman Jody Arrington incompetent. And the Majority Leader Steve Scalise as ineffective and unwilling to take hard positions. Here's what you need to know. The New York Times gets a lot of this wrong. And while I don't know the specifics here, and I haven't been involved in these particular discussions, one thing I can tell you is that Budget Chairman Jody Arrington is not incompetent. He is highly competent. Matter of fact, when Republicans recently gathered to strategize about the upcoming debt limit, Jody Arrington stood before the conference and proposed specific, deep, vertical cuts to agencies in Washington where the taxpayers would be better served and the American people would be better served if we got rid of the federal infrastructure around red tape and bureaucracy and block granted healthcare money, education money, workforce dollars to the states to allow the laboratories of democracy to flourish. And Jody Arrington, the budget chairman, was not mincing words about the fact that there would have to be some entitlements like Medicaid that would be subject to strict work requirements. People who are able to work should work if they want others to be a part of paying for their housing or education or their cell phone or their transportation or any other thing that other people are providing resources for in one's life. That makes society more productive when individual members of the society are more productive. So Arrington lays that out at our strategy meeting. Then this New York Times piece comes out. That's chased by a Julie Grace Berfke piece in Axios going through the various consequences of people reacting to this news from the New York Times. So here's the bottom line. Republicans need an answer on the debt limit. It is approaching, and if we don't lay out a budget and a plan, then we are at Janet Yellen's whim to dictate the timing most advantageous to the administration to force a multi-trillion-dollar increase to the debt limit without any downward pressure on spending. And I'll be straight with you. I have never voted to raise the debt limit. Not during President Biden, not during President Trump, because there was never corresponding spending cuts. And you have to have corresponding spending cuts. Otherwise, we continue to push our nation into an era where being the global reserve currency is not assured. So in the development of a plan, you've seen a variety of different ideas come forward. Patrick McHenry, chairman of the Financial Services Committee, says we should just raise the debt limit clean. Shouldn't make demands for corresponding spending cuts. That I disagree with. Jody Arrington, the budget chairman, he put out a plan at the Republican Strategy Conference. I thought it was pretty good, but now you see this reporting. The House Freedom Caucus has put out a spending cut plan, and it really goes after the woke and weaponized government and wasteful, the three W's. Congressman Andy Biggs has put out a plan, 507 pieces of legislation, specifically reducing spending, going after a lot of the goofy green climate policies, the ESG policies, a lot of the funding of critical race theory and the like, and even the Republican Study Committee, another conservative group, has put out a blueprint and a game plan about how to deal with the debt limit. If we do not move something off of the floor of the House of Representatives with at least 218 votes, it strengthens Biden's hand. And so here's my recommendation. Let's vote on all of them. Let's not be afraid that some spending reduction that we put on the floor might not pass. Let's source all the good ideas that we have from different members of the caucus regarding reductions in spending, and some will pass, some will fail, and then that will constitute the position of the House of Representatives negotiating against the Senate and Joe Biden, because you can rest assured they're not going to be looking for reductions in spending. They believe that the way to deal with the deficit is to hire more IRS agents, to have higher taxes, to have higher compliance costs for people who make under $400,000 a year, families where the cumulative income is less than $400,000. You better expect for your compliance costs to go up. Hope you're able to handle that next multi-$1,000 accounting bill. See, that's where the Biden administration has deviated from their mandate. The American people said during the midterms that we had to deal with inflation, and so often that inflation is driven by bad Fed policy and by government-induced spending. So I don't know what to make of the New York Times veracity. Usually I believe the New York Times is lying until I see proof that they are not, and I don't see that in this reporting. But what I do see is hard work being done by Budget Chairman Jody Arrington, by the House Freedom Caucus, by my colleague Andy Biggs, and I am thoroughly supportive of all of those efforts. And so let's start taking those tough votes on the floor. Let's start seeing where all the Republicans stand and where all the representatives of the people do, and that will put us in the strongest position. Thanks so much for joining us today on Firebrand. Please leave a comment regarding your views on the budget, the debt limit, the strategic days that are ahead. Give us a 5-star rating and make sure to join us next time for Firebrand. Roll the credits.